This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, welcome to Coming Alongside, Mentoring Young Women. I'm glad you're here this morning. I'm glad you care about this subject. And I just want to invite you to sit back and relax and prayerfully hold your setting and your specific talents and abilities and maybe the youth that you rub shoulders with. And just prayerfully hold them before God and listen for the Holy Spirit. I don't know if He'll have anything to say to you or what He would have to say. Hopefully it's not to get me out of here, but but I have invited Him here to work in my life and to work in yours. And so a few clarifications before we dive in. We often speak out of our experiences, and this morning will probably be no different. So a brief background in my life as it relates to mentoring. I didn't call it mentoring right at first. But as an older teen, I just tried to be for younger ladies what I had wanted when I was their age. And then in my lower 20s, one night I can remember the exact place I was, down in my parents' basement, and I got a phone call from a minister, and he was wondering if I would spend some time with the teen. And my eyes got big, and I said, "Who, me?" And so I've been involved in mentoring ever since, in varying degrees of intensity. Most of the mentoring that I do involves Anabaptist youth ages about 14 to about 24, and there are exceptions. There are exceptions here. And about 60 to 75% are connected to the school where I teach. So, not everything I say might fit your setting, and I'm okay with that, all right? I don't even care if you call it mentoring or not. The important thing is that the interactions are happening. Go home and make it yours, all right? Another clarification is a distinction that I see between mentoring and professional counseling. A mentor is somebody who is valued often based off of who they are, and the setting is more informal. It can happen in a variety of places, whereas a professional counselor is often valued, and again, it's generally speaking, but they are often valued based off of their training and their expertise and how much they've helped other clients. And so over the years, that has become a bigger and bigger distinction to me and has been helpful, especially in knowing where my job as a mentor starts and stops, or my role. And this is helpful in knowing when I should refer a young lady to someone with more training than I have. Throughout this workshop, I'll be referring to a survey that I presented to the female students at Terry Hill Mennonite High School. 19 of them responded. They're between the ages of about 14 to 19, and they come from a variety of Anabaptist circles. The survey results were anonymous, but they did give me permission to share what they wrote, and ladies, they had a lot of good things to share. And so I'll be referring to that. I can't put everything that I wanted to in the topic this morning, so I did compile like a little handout, and if you're interested, you can pick one up as you exit at the end of the workshop. Okay, so this morning I split this topic into three different categories: why mentor, the essence of a mentor, and tips and pitfalls. If we look at why mentor, you could ask this question in a variety of different ways, but I think there are many reasons to mentor, of course, and a little biased. But three of the reasons that I believe is, number one, there are youth that are hurting. According to the U.S. Surgeon General report, approximately half of the U.S. young adults ages 18 to 24 have wrestled with anxiety or depression in the last 2 years. Half. And then the second statistic is chilling to me. and that is that currently suicide is the second leading cause of death for U.S. youth ages 10 to about 24. So that's the world at large, but what about youth in our Anabaptist circles? As you may suspect, it's a little harder to find statistics on that, but in 2017, Tim Stolzfus gave a presentation here at REACH, and he had presented a survey to youth. About 650 youth responded in that survey. Maybe some of you participated in that. And I just invite you to look at the top one, depression. The pink bar indicates young women. And according to his survey, about 21% of the youth reported that the top issue they were facing at that time was depression. And so just to bring that home a little bit for all of us, if you think about the youth that you know, maybe in your church, your youth group, if I did my math correctly, and believe me, that's a good question to ask, that would be about 1 in 5 of the youth that you know, all right? So that was 5 years ago. My guess is that those numbers would be higher today. And I don't have statistics for you, it's just my own personal experience. But in the last 5 years, I've heard more references to suicide, to life not being worth living, and to just wanting to end it all, and anxiety, and a host of other things, than I did in the previous 15 years. So, I wonder, are we willing? Are we available? No, we can't meet all youth. Absolutely not. But are we willing to do what we can do in our setting with our specific gifts and abilities? So the second one is the demand is greater than the supply. Again, I don't have statistics for this one, just my own experience. I've struggled to find available mentors for younger and older people that were asking for them. And the scarcity bothers me, ladies, especially because some of them are from Lancaster County. And if there's a lack here in the middle of Lancaster County, I wonder what happens in other communities and counties as well. But it doesn't have to stay this way. You're here this morning, and one by one, we can make a difference. And as I look out into the audience and I see faces that I know and I know what you're involved in, I know that that difference is already happening. All right, the third one is a biblical premise. And so as we look into Scripture, there are a lot of examples. There's Elisha and Elijah, Barnabas and Paul, then there's Paul and Timothy, there's Mordecai and Esther, there's Ruth and Naomi, and here's one that might give you a little bit of a pause. What about King Barak and Deborah? And then there's, of course, a direct call in Titus 2, where it says that the older women are to teach and train the younger women in what is good. And then the verse goes on to unpack what is good. And if that's about as clear of a call as any, and I think each person in this room is an older person to someone. And so it applies to all of us. But I think personally for me, it's what Jesus modeled that's most powerful. You think about it, he came, he left heaven, and he came and entered our world, and he connected with us. But as he did that, he didn't leave his character behind. He didn't leave the fact that he was God behind. And I think in the same way, we need to enter teens' lives to connect with them, but without leaving our role as an adult behind, all right? Maintaining our maturity. Well, there might be times to leave that behind, but maintaining who we are as we enter their world and come alongside them. And then he entered, and then he did life with people. He told stories. He asked good questions. He called out his disciples, and he commended his disciples. And then he also knew when to get away and be with the Father, though the needs were just swirling around him. And I find that just powerful. And he worked with messy people. They walked away from him, misunderstood him, denied him, and betrayed him. And still, ladies, still he loved them and gave his life for them. This isn't original with me, but I have a question for you this morning. Do you think that when Jesus went to to pick the 12 men that he was going to pour his life into, and he picked Judas. Do you think he knew that Judas was going to betray him? Yes? No? So you're nodding your heads. I think he did too. But then I ask this question. What would possess Jesus to pick a man that he was going to pour his life into when he knew that Judas was going to betray him? I don't know, but I have a theory. My theory is this, that Jesus did that for Judas. He poured his life into him, time and energy, because he was worth it. Jesus loves with a period, for no other motive than love. And again, I don't know. So, getting behind in my own slideshow here. Is there a young lady in your life or a young man that you are burdened for and you wonder if they're going to walk away from you? You wonder if they're going to walk away from everything you've taught them, maybe everything they know, maybe even God, maybe even betray you. And I ask, ladies, can we love them with a period? Can we love them not because there'll be another success story in our life, not because they'll do what we wish they would do, but love them because they are worth it? That speaks of unconditional love. So, as we look at reasons to mentor, I don't think these reasons are the world's best-kept secrets. I assume that most of you know that there's youth out there that are hurting. I assume that most people know that there's a need and that there's a biblical basis for reaching out into ladies' lives that are younger than us. So, what do you think keeps us? What are the obstacles that keep us from getting into the arena and into the fray and into the fight? I'd love to hear from you. Just, you can call them out. What would keep you from getting in into something?
Time.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
Inadequacy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Spiritual warfare. Yeah. Oh, okay. The assumption that someone else is taking care of it? Yeah. Absolutely. You have to be vulnerable. I think there's many reasons that we can stop and think about that will give us pause. But I chose to look at three of them, of the more common ones that I hear. One is, I feel inadequate. We touched on that a little bit already. Or maybe we don't feel like we have what it takes. And ladies, I'd just like to say we don't. We don't have what it takes to transform a life, to see into a girl's heart and see all the dynamics that are going on. But we can. We can point her to the one that can transform a life. We can carry burdens. And we do have access to an incredible amount of power as the elect of God. I was discussing this topic with a friend of mine, and she told me about a time that she needed a support system. She was headed overseas into a sensitive country, and she wanted a support system behind her, and so she sat down and she started making a list of the people that she would like to have behind her. And she went out and she started asking people. And several of them said no, because they couldn't possibly see what they could offer her. And she said to me, she said, Janelle, tell your audience, tell the ladies that if someone asked them to come alongside, to walk alongside, that it's because they saw something in you that you could offer. And so I do think that there's reasons to say no, but be careful about this one. This one might not be one of those reasons, all right? The next one is, I don't know how. And this one kind of fits in with the top one, the first one. But I would like to say knowing how is a learnable skill, right? So learn about it, okay? One of my teens said this. She said, catch up with my notes here. She said, always be yourself. You don't need to be perfect. If you're absolutely perfect, it's intimidating, all right? And so another one said, I don't like when they, this is in answer to the question, is there anything that, any interactions that older ladies have with you that you find unhelpful, all right? And she said, I don't like when they try to solve my problems. It would be better if they just listened and said that they would pray for me. And we can all listen, and we can all pray, all right? So one of my friends often used to say, the world doesn't need perfect people. It needs someone to show us how to fail well when there is failure. So the third one is, how do I know when I'm healthy enough to walk alongside others? I asked several of my counselor friends what they would say to this one, and they basically kind of agreed. But it's the relationship can be helpful as long as there's movement or growth in your life, and as long as you're at least one step ahead of the lady that you're mentoring. And I would also, we went on to talk about some of the other things that might be, that probably are good too. And the other one is, as long as you know your weaknesses, what do you do when life grabs you around the neck and doesn't turn out the way you want it to? And do you have a path beaten to the cross in repentance? Or what do you do? Do you know when to refer? And just that whole idea of weaknesses. Okay. So we got all the obstacles out of the way, we jumped the hurdles, and now we're ready to mentor, right? It's always easier to talk about stuff than it is to actually jump, right? And that's me up here this morning. It's easier to talk about these things than it is to apply them to my life. So the essence of a mentor. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines mentor as a trusted guide or counselor. And I like that. I like that definition. But this morning we're talking about a Christian mentor. And so I think that at the core of a Christian mentor is your relationship with Jesus Christ, is the fact that you're connected to the vine. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time with this, even though I do feel that it is the core of a Christian mentor, because whole workshops can talk about, you know, your relationship with Jesus Christ and how to connect with him. But I do feel it's important because it's in the walking and the living and the growing with him that's going to make the Christianity come alive for the girls that you work with, all right? It's how you're going to flesh it out. And here's just an example from my own life. It's a little story. Somehow she wasn't threatened. She saw past our rebellion and she loved us anyway. I remember her often saying in her Michigan accent, "Oh, I love you guys," and then she proved it by her responses and reactions. She wrote a letter to me that summer that touched me and I think impacted my life for life. One of the lines she wrote was, "Janelle, you have many good qualities and talents. Use them to help others and serve the Lord." She was my fifth grade teacher. By seventh grade, I started applying myself to grades and my spiritual life instead of sports and popularity ratings and boys. And I just ultimately tried to be better. And so it wasn't that one little line that made the difference in her life. It was in my life. It was that one little line that came to life because of the way she interacted with me. And ultimately created a thirst to know and serve God. I hung on to the word she spoke. I wanted to be like her. Ladies, I don't know, there's a possibility, but I don't know that I would be involved in this field if it wasn't for Miss Diane Jancy, now Mrs. Martin. And so the essence of a mentor at the core is your relationship with Jesus Christ. But mentoring also has a lot to do with our ability to come alongside youth, all right? And so if we think about the title of our topic this morning, coming alongside, if you imagine with me a crowded sidewalk and you're walking along and you just kind of fall in step with somebody, hopefully I don't fall off. you fall in step, maybe I better stand back here. You fall in step with somebody and that's, you know, you're walking, right? But when I say the word coming, it's different. There's a level of intentionality there. There's a level of pursuit. And now you've got your eyes on somebody and you're coming alongside. And then the second word, alongside, I'd like to do a little activity if I have a volunteer. And basically, I don't think it's going to be too painful. All I'm going to ask is you to come up here for a few minutes, and you won't have to speak, just going to have to put your hand up. Are there any volunteers this morning to help me out? Sure, come on up. Yeah, the stairs are over here. Yeah. Thank you for doing this. And your name is Marilyn? All right. Okay, Marilyn, so what I'm going to do is you can just stand there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk towards you. And as soon as you feel like I hit that space bubble, a little uncomfortable, go ahead and just put your hand out, and I promise I will stop. Okay? You ready? Okay. All right, so those of you in the audience, go ahead and take a mental snapshot of us up here. The next thing, if you come back to center, I'd like you to pick a spot on the back wall somewhere to look at, and I'm going to, again, come towards you, and I want you to just put up your hand when you feel that uncomfortable space bubble thing. Okay, I think I have to stop. What do you see that was different?
You got a lot closer the second time.
Yeah, she's really comfortable with me. Usually it's about 3 feet and 3 inches, the difference. And so, thank you, Marilyn, I appreciate it. You can go ahead and sit down. So I just want to talk about that a little bit. There's a lot of things that we could probably draw from that activity. But you know what I did the first time was come at her, right? How many of you have ever heard of the phrase, get out of my face? Usually spoken by an angry teen, hopefully not to you, but it's that idea that you're coming at them, right? And so the second time, I looked at her and I tried to figure out what she was looking at, and I tried to come alongside. Okay. I'm not advocating this morning that everything a teen wants and is looking at and reaching for is something that we need to just say, oh, sure, a $50,000 truck and you're 16 and you don't even have a job, but you go for it, you know? I'm not advocating that, but I'm advocating that you understand what they're longing for and then go deeper. This, ladies, in the heart of every person, you included, is the image of God stamped on us. And if you can find the inborn dignity in every teen that you work with and you can tap into it, powerful things happen, beautiful things happen. If they know that you are for them. One of my students said this. When I asked, I think this was with the question, what would you like to say to an audience of ladies that might be interested in this topic? And she said this, young women crave your insight. Most of us want to live good, God-honoring lives. We need all the help we can get. You walk this path already. And I repeat, most of us want to live good, God-honoring lives. Ladies, I agree. That has been my experience the last 20 years working at a local high school. Most teens do want what is good. And if you can find that, and if you can find that and tap into it, and it's really what Miss Diane Jancy did for me. All right? It's really what my fifth grade teacher did for me. She tapped into it, and it made a difference. And so let's think about coming alongside. How do we do this? Think about the people in your own life that came alongside you, that impacted you. What did they do or not do that made a difference or that made an impact? And I'd love to hear stories. I think we could have a whole workshop just with inspiring mentoring stories. But this morning, just brief interactions or characteristics of people that came alongside you, and you can just call them out. They listened.
Helped forgive.
Wow.
Validated pain.
Comfortable with tears and quietness.
They understood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I missed the first part, Renita.
They invited me into their home. It was my pastor's wife.
They've invited Renita into their home and spent time. Yeah. So I asked the students what characteristic qualities would be most important to you in a mentor, and I can't spend much time with this, but I found it interesting that the two top character qualities that they listed were honesty and caring. And it reminds me of two words in scripture that are often paired together, and that is truth and mercy, or truth and love. All right, and so I found that fascinating. In answer to the question, mentoring aside, what types of interactions from older ladies do you find helpful? This is what some of them said, and the whole list is, again, on the handout. But here's just a few. Do random things with me, without the intention to give advice, but just spend time and have fun with me. Then another one, even though they might feel, and they're talking about you, even though they might feel awkward, I appreciate the effort when they come up and ask how I'm doing anyway. Okay, push through the awkwardness and I don't know if they want me to talk to them, but who am I to reach into the, push past it. And this one, in my church, I simply don't hear from the older ladies. It's almost like there's a wall in the age gap. I need to work on it too. But if an older lady came up to me and started asking me about my life, what I enjoy doing, the dreams I have, and the things I need prayer for, that would bless me beyond words. Ladies, this is one of my students. I don't know which one. Is there a young lady in your life that you can bless beyond words? And I would like to add that there's also something powerful about having a good belly laugh together, all right? That's, if you wanted to reach me when I was a teen, that's what you did. If you were willing to laugh with me, I started trusting you. Okay, so we talked about connection with Jesus. We talked about coming alongside. And now we'll move into the tips and pitfalls. But before we do that, I want to say just a little bit on basic mentoring skills. Skills are important, and a whole workshop can be done on them. But I want to say this, ladies. All the skills in the world will make very little impact on the teen you're working with if you're not connected to them. Okay? So go learn, be a learner, and grow in the skills like listening, communication, developing perception and insight, and how to facilitate change. But as you learn, remember not to focus so much on the skills that you forget about the girl. She's not a project. She's a girl. Quote I have on my desk as a reminder is, what you know matters, but who you are matters more. And that's by Brené Brown. In his Reach topic, Building Spiritual Relationships, Merle Burkholder says, one way you can start is by noticing who's watching you and who's hanging around you, who's listening to what you say. And then you reach out to those people. All right? And we already talked about some of the more meaningful interactions that you can do. One of the things that I personally try to do next, or maybe before I notice, sometimes I take a list of the students in a class and I just make the list, is that I try to gain a vision for their lives. All right? And so I move down through the list and I ask questions prayerfully and before God, questions to myself and Him, like this. Where is this person at with God? What are their strengths? What are their needs? What does God want to happen in their life? What might a totally redeemed Sally look like? What did God have in mind when He created her? The answers, of course, are something that you need to hold with an open hand. They are not a diagnosis, and usually they need to be kept only between you and God. It's your imagination, and it's you listening to Him, but we're fallible, all right?
But this exercise usually gives me guidance as I interact with a young lady then. And so just a caution from one of the students, as you think about this thing of getting started, sort of, don't force yourself on us. If we don't feel like sharing, just give it time and let us know you're praying for us. Just praying for us can go a long way. And I agree, don't force yourself on somebody. But find the ways that you can invite, but not demand. All right? So you can't stay in your corner of the forest waiting for others to come to you. You have to go to them sometimes. And this is both as a people helper and as somebody wanting help. So pitfalls. What are the pitfalls? Number one, offering too much advice before you've heard story or gained trust. This is one I bump into personally. I'm a talker. All right. Get story is what my mentor, Ida Marie Miller, says. And she says this. She says, especially if it's people you know. We think we know their story, the family, etc., but we don't. So a real caution to hear what's being said rather than assume that we know what's coming. Number two is when the relationship is motivated by fulfilling a need in your own life. Maybe when you're motivated by your daughter you want your daughter to accomplish your dream. Or maybe I want my students to display to the visiting board member that I am just astounding at my classroom management. All right? But you see, do you see how quickly my motive for what I say to them and what I do can become about me instead of about them? It's a real pitfall. And I'm not a mom. I'll hold that thought. Let me go back. Elaine Yoder, hope she's okay with me saying this. Elaine Yoder said this, every person that works in this field meaning people helping, must daily examine their motives and agenda. When you need to have them need you, you are not healthy. Darla Hackman has used the word Messiah complex, and basically it's the idea that they need me to save them. I'm the only one. Like, I am the Messiah in their life. All right? All right. So as I said, I'm not a mom, but I just want to say be careful. It shouldn't be this way, but be aware that sometimes the work you do with other people's children gets more acclaim and more recognition than the work you do with your own. All right? And so public recognition is rarely a true indication of what is most important, and you are in the greatest mentoring setting ever. That being said, I think it's incredibly important to model how to reach out to people. Just be careful with it. Number three, not having authentic connection. We talked about this a little bit. No amount of mentoring training outweighs the value of authentic connection between a mentor and mentee. Not knowing or respecting your energy levels. A good topic, if you want something to listen to, is a previous workshop here at REACH by John Koblenz. It is titled Avoiding Burnout, Maintaining Spiritual Vitality. It's just an excellent thing. Just a little tip, ladies, that's been helpful in my life. Don't ask how many girls can I take on or how much can I do. Ask the question, what is sustainable for the next 10 years? And it changes things, or it did for me. Too cocky, not referring. Right? Referrals are not abandonment or rejection. So walk with them in the transition, be humble and be wise. But know the cases when you should refer. Breaking confidentiality. Married ladies, clarify with the teen whether the girl you're mentoring is okay with you talking to your husband. It's not just a given. Number seven, being careless with physical touch. Number eight, not knowing or caring about legal responsibilities. Number nine, another one could be ignoring primary relationships like marriage, family, and adult friends. Number 10, again, is a huge one, ignoring your own weaknesses and vulnerabilities. We're all created different, and it's no shame if you say, I cannot do that, even though other mentors can. Here's a few from the book Help, My Kids Are Hurting by Marv Penner. Unrestricted availability. We could unpack that one for a while. Uncensored authenticity. He says, while our youth need to see our lives as they are, and that we don't always have our ducks in a row, it is also inappropriate to have a let-it-all-hang-out attitude or approach. And the third one, unlimited acceptance, and again, just beautifully written here, don't forget that because of the relationship of trust a young lady has offered you, you may be one of the few adults in her life who has the freedom to challenge her in areas of inappropriate behavior, destructive relationships, or toxic attitudes. Think about your responsibility to care so deeply that you won't let her get away with the things that will hurt her in the long run. And that one was one I needed to hear. So, live so that you can say, follow me as I follow Christ. If you want to disciple young ladies in meaningful ways, remember that at the core of every young lady is a desire to be loved, to be heard, and to be appreciated. It's going to take thought, it's going to take prayer, and it'll take tears, loads of time, and creativity. You won't have all the answers to their questions. You don't, and you won't, do it all right. And through it all, you have to hold them with an open hand. They're not yours. They're ultimately his. Right? Even Jesus, think about this. Jesus wasn't a failure, but even Jesus left the rich young ruler walk away from him. And we have to too. Just know that you've attempted to participate with him in loving them closer to his heart. And that's what you were called to do, and that was enough. So as this session wraps up, I'd like to ask the question, what's stirring for you? Who comes to your mind as you think about the youth that crossed your path? Who's watching you? Who's hanging around you? What are you going to do that will make a difference in their lives, even if it's just simply making eye contact from across the room? And you give them a smile that says, I see you, and I believe in you, and so does God. Thank you, ladies. I'll turn the time over to her for that.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.